care. Like, I put music at the beginning and the end of our thing, and I used the Rougeaus at the beginning. But I don't know. Do you want to stay married to that, or?
I don't care. It's kind of fitting, because I don't live far from Rodden now.
Is that what does that mean?
That's where they're from.
They're from Rodden?
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, they're about, oh, hang on, I'll tell you. They're like 30 minutes from me.
Wow.
I'm sure, yeah, they are exact. Oh, an hour from me. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like through the back roads you get there.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would know because I was almost arrested there as a child.
Were you stalking the Mountie?
I was doing a horrible thing. I was doing a horrible, horrible thing. I was prank calling somebody there. But relentlessly over
That's
a series
like
of
months. That's not like you at all.
Not at all. That sounds totally different. And it was horrible. He was an old man, and he had a cabana souk, and it's too many stereotypes at once. But looking back on it, he was so such a good person to forgive me. But no, the Sûreté de Québec had left a card at my house. We were in Philadelphia visiting my grandparents, and my sister called my father to say, "There's a card from the provincial police here," and my father's like, "Well." Provincial police doesn't make sense, and I knew right away what it was. I knew right away, and I was like, "Don't extradite me back to Canada."
You think the Quebec police have any jurisdiction in Philadelphia?
But it was like I was thinking, like, we should not. Once we cross that border back into Canada, my life is over.
They're waiting for you at the border.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But we made it home, and then they came, and then they came like a week later. Actually, they came the morning of WrestleMania 10. They came the morning of WrestleMania 10 to say what had happened. And as a punishment, my parents didn't allow me to watch the first 30 minutes of WrestleMania.
You missed the best match.
I missed the best. I walked downstairs as Owen was dropping down on him for the victory roll.
Aww.
Yep. And I was like, oh, I didn't miss much. My daddy goes, well, it was about as good as Savage Steamboat. I was like, come on!
Your dad just has to rub it in.
He was just like blown away. He's like, wow, he was like, that was about as good as Savage Steamboat. That was one of the best matches I've ever had. I was like, I can't believe, but I deserved it. I totally deserved it. Cause then a week later, my dad drove me from the cottage to Rodden and the guy was going to drop the charges if I came to apologize. And I drove and my dad drove and we went to Rodden and I apologized and he was very forgiving. And, but man, I drove him nuts for like 2 months. It was terrible. But, yeah, I totally deserve to not watch Bret Owen. I still got Shawn Razor, but no, I did not deserve to. I deserve way worse. I did deserve way worse. He was a very, very kind man.
Well,
but anyway, that's where the Rougeaus are from, and that's our show from the song. So it all comes full circle. And the Mountie was Jacques Rougeau, a police officer. So you see the circle of life?
Yeah, yeah, it's great. I love how you pulled all that wisdom together.
I did.
Yeah.
You did? You see that?
Yep. Yeah. Ridge.
Ridge. I love that the Mountie getting arrested, like the 10 times they cut back to him at SummerSlam 91.
Yeah.
The 10 times.
Is
and
it...
he's fighting the whole way. And then at the end, they get him into the cell. And he's like, you've got the wrong man.
One of the best parts about that is him berating the cops before any of it.
But that's the thing. He's berating him the entire time.
You
can't do this to me. But then it's at the end when they finally let go of him and leave him in the cell. He's like, you got the wrong man. You'd think he'd say that at the beginning.
Well, there's the promo before the match at all where he's like, he's cutting a promo in front of the cops. Do you remember that promo?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's talking
yeah.
about how shit they are as cops.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's such a good piece of business, that whole thing.
It was. It was. It went on a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big part of that show.
It was.
So that show had a marriage and a prison rape.
Yep, it was. Yeah, it was a lot of backstage stuff, but that was 91 for you.
Like the biggest stereotype gay man in the world in that jail.
Dude, that guy was so yeah.
Don't you just love the way leather feels against your skin?
Ugh. He looked like one of the guys from the Revival too. So it was like
Scott Dawson.
He did.
Oh, that'd be the best if that was like, you know how like it's like before they were stars and it's like Cesaro was like a lawyer or Ciampa, you know? Revival guy raping Jacques Russo.
Exactly. So, Sid.
Sid, well, welcome everybody to Montreal to Memphis.
Memphis. No.
I don't know what that has to do with anything anymore.
Now you know the backstory as to why we have called our show Montreal to Memphis.
I feel like we just picked that because it's a lyric from a song.
I think you're crazy for thinking
that. We might as well have called it like Tommy used to work on the dock, like a wrestling podcast.
Yes.
Streetlight People, an investigative report on Vince McMahon's psyche. Look, thanks for joining us. North-South Podcast Wrestling Network. Reg, how are you?
I'm fine, Aaron. How are you?
I'm all right. I don't like, you know, I did this, but I don't like the pleasantries.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt weird and artificial.
Yeah, hell to you. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel better. Because it's wrestling. Guess. We're supposed to pretend to hate each other.
Right, right. We gotta pretend. Okay, what are we talking about tonight?
Okay, so it was a couple weeks ago. I think it was like the first week of the quarantine. And so I had a ton of time to kill. So you and I were texting about something all night and joking about something, and I started watching a Sid Shoot interview on YouTube.
Now, is this the one that is Sid Vicious full career shoot interview? He's wearing a white, like a checkered shirt.
Checkered, that's it. The checkered shirt, and it's like green spray painted in the back.
Yeah, if you want to look at it. If anybody wants to check it out, just type in Sid Vicious full career shoot interview, and the author is The Hannibal TV. Go on.
And yeah, and so you and I were talking about something completely unrelated, and then I'm watching this thing, and I remember texting you my first reaction to this, because Sid had described the night of the Royal Rumble 92, the greatest Royal Rumble of all time.
Yeah. Well, after 95.
What's that?
95, then 92.
95, of course, because they got in and out the fastest.
Yep.
And anyway, so he says an anecdote in there, and I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. And I texted you, and I was like, I'm listening to the craziest man talk about the craziest things right now. And then I thought about it, like I woke up the next day and there was nothing to do, and then my brain had like wrapped around the whole night. You know, when you're kind of smarter the next day about stuff.
Sure.
No? Okay, just me. All right.
Yeah, you get progressively smarter every night.
Yeah, every day. So, yes, exactly. It's what happens when you don't have children or a girlfriend. And
they make you. The children make you progressively dumber.
Well, they tire you out.
Dude.
Yeah. I wouldn't know. I just hear about it. But anyway, but literally that day, and I say this in all seriousness, I was like, wait a minute. Everything he's saying actually makes sense. And I considered for a second, everything I've heard about Sid when it comes to the WWF has always come from the perspective of people in the WWF, that it's just like, oh, he's just crazy. He always wants his way. And then he just bolts for softball. That's always been the meme around Sid. And then I replayed what he had said about Rumble and about WrestleMania and about why he came to the company. And it all just made sense. It made so much sense. And when you combine this stuff with what was happening on screen, and I was like, oh, that lines up. That lines up exactly why he would have left. That lines up why he would have walked out right after the Ultimate Warrior. It lines up why he got disheartened throughout the whole thing. It actually makes sense. And I thought, wow, wouldn't this be cool to just talk about? Because it's one of our favorite periods of wrestling as long as I've known you.
Yeah.
Is the 91 to 92 stretch. I mean, I know you love 98 as well, but for us combined.
Oh yeah.
Basically the summer of 91 to WrestleMania 8, we both adore.
Yeah. And I think when we were talking about this the other day, I kind of threw out 98 as another potential, but I think 90, this would be my favorite.
Yeah. It's my, and there's chaos on screen. There's chaos off screen, as we know, and the time changes. But there's so many stars in the company at this point, coming to the apex and the end of their run.
Well, when,
a lot of them together at the same time.
Well, when you look at that Royal Rumble, like you brought it up, kind of like as like the starting point, but that Royal Rumble has nothing but stars in it.
Nothing but stars. Even the mid-carders that are stars as they're linked to Flair. When you see Valentine come out,
yeah,
and Martel come out, and all these people that Flair had history with, and the Texas Tornado gets elevated because of his history at Dallas, Texas Stadium with Flair.
Repo Man.
Repo Man, yeah, of course.
Well, and it also speaks to, like, I mean, as much as you're right in that too, you got to give credit to Bobby Heenan to selling all those feuds.
He was incredible.
Like, he made the Barbarian seem like a problem against Flair.
He did. Yeah. He did. And also, and berating the Barbarian as to why he's going after Flair.
Right. Like, for some reason, Bobby doesn't understand the rules of the match.
Yeah, like, he's going to keep it in the family, even though he hasn't managed either. He hasn't managed the Barbarian in a year.
And he never cared about the Barbarian. Like, he never cared.
He didn't. And he also said Barbarian never listened to him.
No, and he didn't care about his pursuits. He didn't care about his hunting or his fur or his paint.
No, he didn't.
The antlers he wore on his head.
But getting back to Sid, because Sid comes in, there's two WCW guys that come in after WrestleMania 7. Because after WrestleMania 7, you don't have any heels left because Slaughter has gone down to Hogan. He's fulfilled his purpose. Savage is, quote unquote, retired.
Yeah. Mr. So Perfect has been beaten to a pulp by everybody.
Yes, exactly. And it turns out that his back is about to give way. So they turn Jake heel. And they have two guys coming in who are about to change the game. They have Flair coming in and Sid coming in.
Well, and Sid comes in first.
Sid comes in first. And we don't know if he's a face or if he's a heel, and we figure that out at SummerSlam because he just looks like a heel.
Yeah, and we think he might be representing Justice.
Yeah, exactly. But either way, Justice will be served.
Yeah.
In that match, right?
Obviously.
Does that mean Sid will be served or Justice itself? And we had to tune into SummerSlam 91 to find out. And then the company had already shot Warrior Jake with the snake biting angles where he had him, you know, in there. And then Warrior leaves the company abruptly. So Sid gets pushed up much quicker in the face position.
I wonder why they went with Sid as the ref instead of just putting him on the team.
Well, here's what it's an interesting, I guess they don't want to expose his in-ring stuff, maybe.
What are you talking about?
Well, here's how Sid was lured away from WCW at the time. So yep. For those of us who are following the Meltzer stuff and whatever, he was going back and forth between the shoot interview, he talks more about it. He's going back and forth between WCW and WWF, and he had guaranteed money from WCW as an offer. But Vince offered him a main event babyface push.
An opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And now, thinking back to this, we don't see Sid as a face. We see him as a heel.
Right.
But here's the point that I'd never considered is that at that time, especially, heels didn't make any money on merchandise. Faces did.
Right.
So for Sid, what he illustrates in this interview is like he was leaving that so that he could be a face because there wasn't guaranteed money for Vince, but he would have had the merchandising. And so he was there because he was under the impression that he was going to be main eventing WrestleMania as a face.
Right. And making that sweet, sweet like merchandise money. Like the Hogan he's basically they're prepping him for the Hogan spot.
They're prepping him for the Hogan spot. Exactly. Yeah.
Now,
and the SummerSlam. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and it's just interesting because there are probably hundreds of guys that have been offered that spot.
As a heel.
Right. But like how many guys does Vince McMahon say you're going to be a top face in the company going forward to? Like, and then, well, we see what happens with Sid.
But it's interesting because Pritchard brought that up. He says what Vince will do is he will make vague statements like, imagine, pal, you're in the main event of WrestleMania. You know, and then people think that that's what, you know, it's a guarantee, but it's, you know, he will talk like that.
Right. Definitely when you say Russell.
Yeah, Russell. It's WrestleMania. Russell. This very special professional wrestler. I just love Sid. I love McMahon, like, not in character. These are very special professional wrestlers.
That's the best low-key Vince impression is your...
Yeah, it is. It's the only one I can do.
Because everybody else screams, but this is him around his dinner table, like, talking to his wife.
Yeah, exactly. Linda, this is a very special meal that you've made.
Point of fact.
Point of fact, yeah. He has those expressions that he has that aren't human.
No.
The first thing that Sid says that kind of blew my mind, and he says it in this interview, totally blows my mind.
He's a suicide machine?
He's a suicide. He doesn't say it in this interview, but he says, and this is where I just, because I've laid some backstory here, and it won't be as shocking when I say it, but he says after at the Royal Rumble in Albany, and the crowd had popped for him throwing Hogan out, he goes back to Vince McMahon and says he quits. And I was shocked by that.
Well,
but
I mean, do you remember what else he said about it though, and why?
Well, so what had happened? Yeah, so what had happened was, if you remember, he and when I say you, I know you remember, but our listeners remember. In October of '91, he's feuding with Jake, and then he goes down with a shoulder injury, which he blames on Jake in the interview. And
can't trust a snake.
You know, nope. You can't trust a snake. And so he comes back at the beginning of January for some TV tapings, and they basically he was still a face at that point. He had done some he'd done a barbershop interview, not the infamous one with the whipped cream, the shaving cream on his face.
Yep, go
on. I know that's your favorite one.
I love it. I love it.
Love it. but. It was right prior – it was at the Rumble, I guess. It was at the Rumble that Vince tells him they're turning him heel.
Right.
And at this point – so he's looked at this whole thing where he's left WCW. He's left all this money. And now he's got to become a heel. And so he's left all that money. He can't do the merch money. That was the key point. That's the point I'd never thought about up to this point.
Right.
He can't get the merch money anymore. Not that – you know, there were some – you'll see it in the interviews before the Rumble. He's wearing Sid Justice shirts, and it's kind of shaped like the map of the United States, and it has like his name in there in red, white, and blue. You know, pretty generic stuff.
He's the all-American psychopath.
Yeah, I'm all-American. Yeah. So, so they tell him he's turning heel, and then he tosses Hogan, and the crowd pops for Sid. Now you can see. Now I rewatched that. You can see him in that scuffle with Hogan, saying, look, they're cheering for me. Cheering for me. I think that was a shoot for me at that point, watching that.
Yeah, for sure. Hulk who? When he sees that sign and he points it out.
Yeah. And then he calls him a fat boy at that point. Oh, yeah, a fat boy. And then they go, let's go back to Mean Gene Okerlund. And the last thing you hear Sid go, I'll kill ya.
Yeah. Sid always had that element of danger. Like, I believed he would kill someone.
Yeah, and he almost did, like, the next year.
Well, and it's funny because we're saying this, like, I'll kill you, he's a dangerous guy. But right after that moment, he tells a story in the shoot interview where he goes backstage and Hogan is, like, throwing a fit to Vince, right?
Right.
And he's like, oh, I can't believe they're like, just basically throwing a big hissy fit. And he tells Vince, Sid tells Vince that I don't want to work in an environment where someone acts this way. Which feels completely opposite to like, shut up! And I'm a suicide machine. And I'm gonna stab someone with a pair of scissors.
Yeah, exactly. And the way he says, "I'm sorry, Vince. I don't want to work in this environment." Like that's how he says it. I'm like, it's like Robert De Niro, Cape Fear.
He's so calm about it. He seems like watching this shoot. He comes off as like the most low key grateful guy. You could ever want to meet. Yeah. Like this nice man.
Well, there's a lot of good qualities that he has that we'll find out like in 96. There's a thing that we'll talk about. But like he's a person, you know, he is a person, and a lot of the stuff backstage, we don't know all the sides to it. There's a lot he says he doesn't remember. But he's pretty honest. He is a pretty honest person. Because when he's wrong, he's wrong.
Right.
He kind of does admit when he's wrong and yeah, you'll see that he's not there to he's not covering up a lot when he looks bad. Like he does look bad in the Brian Pillman fight, but it's not as ridiculous as everybody says.
Well, that starts in the cage, and he's really open about how he's trying to hurt him in that cage.
He did. He was very open. He's like, no, I tried to hurt him. I tried to break his neck. He did.
He said that with the same calm demeanor as like, I can't work in this environment.
I can't work in this environment, man.
Meanwhile, he's trying to break Brian Pillman's neck.
So there's two sides to the guy is what we're saying.
Yeah. It's almost like he's a psychopath.
He is, but he knows – like the thing is like – I'll say this, and I'm not saying this as a defense for the man, Sid. I'm saying it for the the truthfulness of what he's saying. Because he's honest about the bad things, I give credit to him when he says what he's saying, because he has something to lose.
Yeah.
So he had nothing to gain by saying, yeah, he deliberately tried to hurt Brian Pillman. He could have said, you know, it was an accident in the ring. He could have easily gotten away with saying that, and then said, you know, they ganged up on him around his car.
Right.
He could have, but he doesn't. He said that Pillman had every reason to be angry at him because he had, you know, and they happened to be crossing towns and they bumped into each other at a bar, and that's what had occurred. So I give that to his credit in this interview, because he, and you can tell when he's kind of ashamed. There is some shame in what he says.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's not intentional, but it sets a precedent of honesty.
It does.
Like, he's not gonna, like, I can believe that maybe he went to see Vince and said, I can't work like this, after he tells us he tried to purposely break a man's neck.
Right, right. But also, even if he said it or he didn't, I understand the motivation for him saying that. He wanted out at that point. And that's because, okay, so not only is he not going to be making his merchandise as a top babyface, mm-hmm. but they're turning him heel, and not even the audience wants that. Not even the crowd wanted that.
Right.
So I can understand what he's saying.
For sure. For sure. And when you look at it, too, in terms of, like, it feels like such a short-term problem. Because you got to believe at this point – they kind of had an idea that Hogan was taken off, right? So he was going to have his run with Hogan, and then what?
Right, and that's interesting as to why he quits.
Yeah.
Because they do the WrestleMania thing, and they protect him. He wins by – he loses by DQ. They protected him.
Yeah.
And then he goes into a feud with Warriors. So from his perspective, he still thinks he should be transitioned back to top babyface. But I think he says in there something along the lines of they had no heels, so they had to bring in Papa Shango at that point.
Right.
Which they did. They had no heels. I mean, Jake had just left.
Yeah.
If you take – you have the mat.
Like, and Flair's – well, no, Flair's still there. You got Flair still, at least.
Yeah, you got – I counted. You got 18 people that leave in the first 3 months of that year.
Right.
And four of them are main eventers. Being Hogan, Piper, Jake, and eventually Sid.
Right.
And then you have a mass exodus that year. I mean, you have the mid card that made up the 80s that go quietly. You got Haku that goes, Barbarian that goes, Warlord that goes, Greg Valentine that goes, Snuka that goes. It's a mass exodus. So even Sheik and Volkov go. These are maybe not the biggest people, but these are the people that identified us with that, those classic 80s to 90s years of WWF. So
with the company. It's the people that, like, you associate with the company. In the same way, like, when you're watching old NWA and suddenly Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson aren't there.
Exactly. And these are the people. And these are like the steroid era guys. You know, right. These aren't small guys. These are the steroid. I mean, if you look at 92, at the end of 92 versus the beginning of 92, it's a totally different company. I mean, you have Bam Bam Bigelow is there, Kamala is there, Yokozuna is there, and these are fat guys. That their big guys are now fat guys, and their regular guys are Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair. You know, Mr. Perfect now has to take on a big role as a babyface. So there's a mass exodus the entire year, and so in the midst of that, Sid's expecting, okay, I can go back to being top babyface, which brings us to the Boston incident. It was the house show in April where he faces the Warrior.
Yeah.
And so the way they had laid the match out was that the Warrior was going to kick out of the powerbomb. And the night before, they were in a different town. I don't remember which one it was. Do you remember which one that was?
I don't remember. No, I don't remember.
So he actually kicks out of it, but talks about how he had sent message through the agents to Vince McMahon saying he's not kicking out the second night.
Yeah.
And
basically like, if you give me the same finish, we'll do this tonight, but if you give me the same finish in Boston, I'm out of here.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. And so they laid out the match, and in fact it was laid out originally that Warrior was just going to keep clotheslining the crap out of him. And Sid was like, "Nope, you're going to clothesline me once and I'll roll out of the ring." And I can see this. He's like, he's losing all his credibility at this point. He's not even a face. And they're turning him to a chicken shit heel. He's having to be the chicken shit heel instead of just – they wanted to have him be dominated by the Warrior.
Right.
And so they do the finish where Warrior kicks out again, and Sid left.
Yeah.
And I completely understand. He had guaranteed money in WCW, and he's now down to this.
Well, you can tell, even before he in the shoot interview, even before he starts telling this story, everyone else who comes to WWF, WWE, like everybody, like Jericho describes it as like coming when Dorothy goes in the Wizard of Oz. You know, like, and have you seen the Wizard of Oz?
Yes, I've seen the Wizard of Oz. I had to check my brain for. I was like, wait a minute, have I seen this one? He's gonna jump on me for this.
And like the whole world is color, you know. Even Arn Anderson describes it as better. Ric Flair describes it as. Everyone describes it as better. Every single person describes going to WWF as better. In this shoot interview, you can see right away as soon as he talks about going, I think he even says it was a huge mistake. And it's, he's so unique in that. I think there's guys that end up being bitter after, and I think it's very much a new thing too. Like you'll get guys like Cody Rhodes, you know. I'm sure he's grateful for his time there, but he clearly has resentment, right?
Right.
But people from this era, there's almost none of them that have this mindset. And I think that's fascinating.
Mm.
Like he really was like it was a big mistake that I went there. Mm. And arguably had maybe the best creative run of his career.
From 91, 92?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you could probably make an argument for 96 or when he's screaming at Goldberg for the car. Why me? I love how when the guy comes and gives him the number, he knows what's happened already.
Hey, Moses. It's Moses. You can't forget. It's Moses. You got to check that out. The Goldberg car thing where it's down to a cube. Nitro 99. Yes, check it out.
Where's my car in 42? 42!
Yeah, 42!
There's no reason for him to be screaming that at him.
Yeah, so he's already
he's already way ahead
totally,
of him.
That was a totally ad-libbed moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what goes on at 42!
What struck me about this whole contract thing was interesting is it's really cool that Talon had this kind of power then that they could just go. It's such an interesting contrast to like now, like the guys from the Revival have to stay home for 6 months because Vince just doesn't want to let them work.
Yeah.
You know, like
and it's funny because you can understand from Vince's psychopathic view, being a control freak that he is, he doesn't want to have to go through anymore what he did with those big stars in those days.
Right. He doesn't want to have to be beholding to them at all listen to them. And it's an interesting thing, right? Like, it's such a weird thing. I don't want to get back on Vince because we talked about that last time. But it's like every time he's listened to the audience or listened to the talent, his product has gotten way better.
Yeah. And maybe he was the only one not enjoying it as much as we were because he was having to deal with all these egos.
Right. That's a weird thing. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and he leaves, and Sid goes – does he go right back to WCW? Almost right away, right?
It's almost right away, and this one shocked me. He goes back as a booker, it was on the booking team.
Right.
Can you imagine him sitting there at the meeting? What's he wearing at that meeting?
He's wearing exactly what he's wearing in the 92 press conference.
The blue gym track outfit?
Yeah, he's wearing that. He's got his papers in front of him. He's going to crumple.
The crumple paper moment at the press conference was it. I never get tired of that.
No, because it's the best. Because that's I don't remember if it was you brought it up to me originally, but like that's his acceptance speech, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was it. I didn't bring it up. No, that's brilliant. I did not think of that. Like that is brilliant.
Like that's the idea is that he wrote that to like be gracious to the reporters.
What do we call that in theater? Is that business?
Yeah.
Business is his piece of business. Yeah.
Like he's gonna get up and give this gracious speech, like, and then he doesn't get named, so he fucking tears it up.
That's brilliant. Yeah, and the papers go everywhere.
Now what you did, Jack Tunney, was bogus. The most. Bogus
I remember. Thing. Sorry, I don't want to cut in that famous line. Famous line.
You ever pulled off between his teeth?
You ever pulled off? I remember that we were in Lake George. It was my parents and my brother. We were in Lake George and we were in a hotel and my dad would flip through the channel looking for wrestling. And this was right before I got back into it at the time because I was a fan, you know, in the late 80s. And then, I stopped watching for a bit and then I got back into it at the end of 92. But at this point, I was kind of Anyway, he's flipping through, and I find I see this press conference. And in my head, I was like, wow, they're really picking up steam again. This is huge. There's a real press conference. I thought it was a legit press conference. I didn't know that it was Lou Gianfrido with a camera and whoever else it was. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, that was a great moment. But see, that's a snapshot of 92, because you just see those – look at all those stars that are up there. Like it's Piper and Taker and Flair and Hennig and Hogan and Savage and it's and Sid. It's just it's a crazy time because there's so many names.
Do you remember what Hogan says when he wins, that or when he gets named the number one contender?
Is it – yes, it's me.
It's me. It's me. I worked with this actress once. She was in my year at theater school, and whenever someone would mention her character's name on stage, like whatever, like, you know, like if her name was Meredith, but that's not the person's name, but like if the character's name was Meredith, every time that another actor would say it in the midst of the show, she would look at the audience and mouth, "It's me." And I never understood what the fuck she was doing.
Like as in her legit name?
No, as in her character. Okay. Her character would look at the audience and like
break the fourth wall.
They're talking about me.
That's okay.
Yeah. So much so that when I've had to play like a bad actor on stage, I do it.
Okay. I have a feeling she's not in the business anymore.
I think she is actually.
Oh, okay. We'll have to find out who that is off camera.
Blonde hair, thin.
Oh. Oh yeah. Oh, that is something she would do. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the same
person
along.
Who, when I was in high school, we were talking. We were in a show, and she was talking about. She had a line about constellations, right? She was talking about constellations, and we all thought she was dumb because she had blonde hair, and you know, and we're like, "Do you even know what that means?" And she's like, "Duh." No, it wasn't constellations. Sorry, it was. She had a line talking about consternations.
Oh, okay.
And we're like, do you know what that means? She goes, duh, consternations in the sky.
Oh, that's and it's exactly how she would say it, too.
Yeah, like, we're the idiots.
Yeah. Like,
it's such stupid. It's such a typical stupid person thing for, like, the stupid person to think you're the idiot. Like,
yeah. Come on, stupid. So he goes to WCW and in 93, and they talk about the Shockmaster angle.
Yeah.
And he said he was the one who was saying from the beginning of the day that he's going to trip over that piece of wood.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I don't know if that was the narrative. I only heard that narrative once. I forget who told the story, but it wasn't him. Like nobody knew about that piece of wood. Like until like I guess everyone would have known about it backstage. Like Fred Ottoman would have been like, guys, I tripped over the wood.
Yeah, well, he was saying that he knew it all day. He said he's saying – they're like, no, it's okay. He'll get a running start. And I'm like, that – all right.
Gonna make it any better.
But okay, so people were saying different things on there. So I know Bulldog, when he falls, Bulldog goes, oh, he fell on his arse. He
fell on his arse.
And what was Sid – do you remember what Sid said?
I don't remember.
He said something. I can't remember. It's something like, I knew it. Like, I knew it. Like, it was something along those lines.
That's such a funny in character line because it could mean anything.
Yep.
Like, oh, he knew the Shockmaster was the secret.
Yeah. Yeah. He knew it was Fred Ottman.
Ah, I knew it.
That's gonna so be he comes the, back. So, yeah, go ahead.
That's got to be the laziest costume ever, right? The Shockmaster?
With a Stormtrooper helmet? Yeah.
With glitter on it and then a cut up shirt?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Well, that and the Conquistadors.
At least they were uniform. Like I would agree if the Conquistadors were – if there was just one of them. But because there's two of them, there's a uniform.
Yeah, that's true.
Mind you, I'm watching some old WCW and NWA stuff right now, and the costumes there are probably the lowest grade you'll see. They're quite disgusting.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, I remember that. So 96 comes around, and this was after the 95 run where they had completely jobbed out.
Where
Sid.
They made him a chicken shit heel.
They ruined him at the Diesel, the first Diesel match.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was funny because it was Diesel and Sean that wanted him brought in.
Right.
So he comes in, and maybe it was because they knew they could make him look bad. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Pritchard's response to that is always like, why would we pay someone all that money just to bring them on and make them look bad? My answer is always like, because you're fucking assholes and you're psychopaths.
Yeah,
and like,
you had him feuding with Henry Godwin within 4 months. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and well, he's in kind of a weird position there because, like, this is something I talked about in one of my other shows. It's called The Year That Was, when I talked about 1995. It's like, once you get past Shawn Michaels with the Diesel Challengers, there's nobody there. There's nobody there to fight with him. So Sid gets kind of thrown in there, right, with very little build or – I mean, besides beating up Shawn Michaels. And it's just not a, it's not a good fit.
And it wasn't supposed to happen either. It was supposed to be Shawn and Diesel at SummerSlam? Or it was supposed to be Shawn and Diesel at In Your House, right?
I don't know. Was that the original plan?
Yeah, that was the story. That was the funny story where it's like everyone was telling Vince for months that they need to turn Shawn face. And then Sid attacks him. And then it was after WrestleMania that he goes, Shawn's a babyface. We have a babyface in our hands. Why didn't anybody tell me?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they rewrote the entire summer, essentially, that day of the Raw. To turn Shawn babyface, but it's, no, Sid was not supposed to be turned.
And what a job they did with that summer. is that the worst summer they've ever had?
It's a bad summer.
I mean, it's a bad year altogether because there's just nobody there. But like,
yeah, there's just no. But the thing is, it's like it's not like they didn't have anybody. You had Undertaker, Bulldog, Luger, Bret, Shawn, and Diesel as faces. And you have Kama and Mabel as your heels. Like, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a book to be written about the misuse of Bret Hart in 95. Because 95 does have some pretty decent high points, and they're all Bret-related.
Yeah, he did carry that mid-card, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, like, that poor guy, like, he gets shunted down there. He's fighting dentists and pirates and, like an old crazy guy. Like, meanwhile, meanwhile, you put him in there with Diesel, he's good. He has that match at Survivor Series, which is excellent. The match with Bulldog in December is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, what's missing here? What am I missing?
Well, he pulled out a good match with Lafitte also.
Yeah, but it's a terrible feud, right? He has a good match with
– It's a terrible feud, yeah.
A good match with Akushi, too. Like.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, but
there
were
two good matches with Akushi.
I think you could make an argument that from the time Sid leaves – no, I would say probably from 93. When you get to 93, there are no full-time superstars in that company until I would say maybe 96.
Hmm.
Because I don't know about you, but I don't think Bret – this is something my buddy JT and I were talking about the other day. I don't think Bret becomes – I don't think Bret becomes the tippy-top guy until late 96. I think they push him as one. But he's not viewed on that main event level yet, I don't think.
I never viewed him on the main, because I would always compare it back to the Hogan years. And
right.
Even as a kid, I'd be like, this just more feels like there's just not enough people here anymore.
I think,
and that's why these people are on top right now.
Yeah, I think the exception to that is 97. I think when he's doing the anti-Canada stuff, I think it feels pretty...
I'm not talking about 97. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm talking about 94.
Oh, yeah, 94, 95. And even 95, Shawn's not there yet. Diesel's floundering. Undertaker is like, he's a big star, but he's not that guy yet. Like, it's easy to look at it in hindsight and be like, well, he's the Undertaker. But, like, at that point, he's only 4 years into being Undertaker, and all he does is wrestle big guys in terrible matches.
Yeah, and bad gimmicked guys.
Yeah, so like,
yeah.
There's no stars. The cupboard is empty. So it makes sense that Sid comes in and gets pushed because he is a superstar.
I remember feeling that when he came in. I was like, oh, we've got a legit top guy back.
Yeah.
That's what was. It was like, we got one of the top – and I would always think about it. Oh, we got one of the big four back. And the big four I always mean is the four guys on the box cover of WrestleMania 8.
Hogan, Flair, Savage, and Sid.
I mean, come on. Yeah. That's a great top four. And I was like, well, we got one of them back, so at least, you know, things could look good from here.
I think that very much speaks to where we were age-wise when that happened. Because, like, in essence, like, that in itself was even a weaker version of what the WWF Big Four would be.
Yeah.
Like, what would be the WWF Big Four, like, up until that point? It's probably Hogan, Piper, Andre... And maybe Savage.
And Savage, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, those are your top four.
Yeah, so you're even conceding a bit, putting in Sid and Flair. not to shit on them, you know what I mean? But just
no,
to, like,
and I don't mean it like, you know, I just mean Big Four anyway, because Flair was never WWF.
No.
Or especially at that point, he wasn't. But no. He never really was.
But to hear him talk about it now, it's as though, like, he wasted his career everywhere else. Like, multiple-time world champion. Like,
yeah.
He main events every Starrcade. Like, he's the most important guy in that company. Bar,
well,
company.
He knows where his paycheck is coming from today.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just a star-studded – I mean, 92, I mean, it's funny because the Hoosier Dome, that match at WrestleMania 8, the whole card, it's really like a microcosm, because as a kid watching that, I'm like, wow, we're at a Super Dome show, yeah, you know, packed with stars. But the reality is everybody's leaving and most of those people didn't pay to be there.
Right. Now, that show also suffers – quite a bit on a few like levels, because remember the highs, but there's some pretty heavy lows there too. And it is,
but they're short and quick and they're just time fillers.
Well, yes and no, because you get the Savage Flair match at the midpoint, which I think is a vastly underrated match in WWF lore, and then until you get to Hogan Sid, I think that second half is really weak. Like Tatanka,
it is, but it's not a half, it's like you're at two-thirds of the show.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Because those three matches were just like, they're all like, except for the tag match, which DiBiase got screamed at for, they were all under 5 minutes.
Who screamed at him, Sid?
Yeah, no, it was, I think it was, you see Patterson come out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that match was supposed to be, again, because if you look at all the matches right after the championship match, you have, Vince screamed at a lot of people that night. Because Flair bladed, screamed at him, screamed at DiBiase for going long on the match, and already Brett bladed, and he was already questioning
fired
Brett.
Up.
Yeah, he was already fired up. Then Flair, and he's screaming. Yeah, so it was rough for everybody. But oh, and then Papa Shango missing his cue. So yeah, he was a rough night for McMahon, but or for the people. Papa Shango probably got it the worst.
Oh yeah, is there a bigger hypocrite in the wrestling world when it comes to blood other than Vince McMahon?
Yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah,
do you remember the amount of blood he spilled against Zach Gowen?
Oh, that was disgusting. Yeah.
Or The Undertaker. The Undertaker murdered him in that. And is it 2003? Fights The Undertaker, right?
Survivor Series 2003. Yeah.
Yeah, that man's blood.
So yeah,
more than anyone.
So that show is just like that show. It just looks amazing. And it's funny because I mean, that for me, I other than WrestleMania 18, that's my most, you know, fantasy rebook show.
Eight?
Yeah, because I mean, the opening, you're supposed to have Sean and Jannetty. That's supposed to be your opener,
right?
Because Jannetty gets fired, right?
Stupid. Just I think keep the him only... around for the match.
I would have been amazing. It would have been. Well, I mean, he's already at firing number 2 of 7 at that point, Jannetty.
Yeah, he's on his way to the record.
So then you have Roberts, who's just held up the company for money. He tried to play them for money, and he got caught bad. So they job him fast. He doesn't even get an entrance.
Well, everything you hear about Roberts, too, though, is that he really wanted to be on the creative team at that point, and they are refusing him. Those are words from – which makes no sense.
None.
Like, of all the people, of all the wrestlers who are begging to be part of the creative team, maybe let Jake Roberts sit in the room.
That fall as him as a heel was just upsetting, but I mean in a good way.
Oh,
it was
just
– I remember when he has the snake biting into Savage's arm, and my mother's like, get him out of the room, to my dad about me. Get him out of the room.
Well, and there's that shot of the
– The shot of the kid crying?
The shot of the kid's amazing, but also the shot of like the snake kind of like coiled up with Jake in the background or facing it laughing.
Yeah.
It's he's a heel for like 6 months, and he might be the best heel they've ever had.
I think he's the best heel they ever had for those
things. Yeah. I mean, there's arguments, but yeah, he's up there for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. You can you have to include that run in the conversation, because after when he turns on or Undertaker turns on him, that's like a nothing feud compared to everything else, because it wasn't even supposed to be that match. See, so if Sid is supposed to be a babyface,
yeah,
and Hogan's not supposed to be leaving, then you're gonna have Sid against the Undertaker. Sid is a face against a heel Undertaker.
And
you're never gonna have the Undertaker.
For sure,
exactly. Ended at one.
Yeah.
I mean, he powerbombs Taker, which would probably have been a cool spectacle to see.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it a few years later, and it wasn't good. But.
It wasn't – it was a little crappy if you know what I mean. But and so you would have had Hogan going over Flair, and then you would have had – Bret and Piper would have been the same. And you would have Shawn and Jannetty.
Yeah, and you're And you're leaving out the best, probably the best match on the card. You didn't even mention Jake and Savage.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, Jake and Savage. Yeah,
and you probably put that in a cage or like you have like a big blow off now.
And it wouldn't have been outplayed because because the original feud was supposed to be Sid and Jake. The original feud was supposed to be Warrior and Jake.
Right.
Then it got shunted to Sid and Jake. Then it got shunted to Savage and Jake.
And Savage was ultimately the best choice because no one conveys emotion like Savage.
Nobody does. No. Yeah.
I mean,
so that would have been an incredible card.
Maybe when Warrior was throwing up from the Papa Shango, there was a lot of emotion going on.
I would say there was chemistry, like internal chemistry with Warrior and himself, but I don't.
Now, here's the thing with that rebook, because you're right, there's a lot of good there, but I would not want to lose that Savage Flair match.
I know.
And it's the perfect – see, I've always kind of looked at Savage – and maybe we'll do an episode on Savage at some point. But I've always looked at Savage as like his whole first run there, up until I would imagine this, or I guess you could extend if you want. It's really like the best single arc of anyone they've ever had.
We should do a whole show on that.
Yeah, let's leave.
Because I agree with we'll leave that. But that we should do a whole show on that because I agree with that arc, the arc theory. Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to take that match away, but it's crazy you don't get Hogan Flair.
It's crazy you don't get Hogan Flair, but we would have gotten Hogan Flair. I'm confident. I know Pritchard said we never would have gotten that. I don't believe that.
Fuck him. He's just a liar. But then that being said, people shit on that main event with Hogan Sid, but I quite like it. Like, I don't think
it's the best entrance ever.
Oh yeah, because he's gonna murder
main event.
Hogan. Yeah.
Sid entrance and then Hogan's entrance to beating him to the music.
Yes,
it was magic. It was, and you think you might be watching him for the fun. Rewatch the Sid, just the entrances. It's adrenaline. Sid marching down to the ring to that music, to that loud kicking boom drum.
Yeah, and in rhythm.
In rhythm
to the music.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Hogan comes out, and it's like, and it's there's so much. It's almost it's bittersweet. Because when he enters the ring, Sid goes to attack him, and the music is still playing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it, but when he
oh,
happened 30 years ago.
Yeah, they've seen
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But when he beats him down and he goes for the ear, it's like when the guitar riff hits.
Yeah.
Oh, when he turns, when Sid starts beating him down, and then when "I Am a Real American" hits it twice in a row on the song, that's when he turns around and starts nailing Sid back, like perfectly on cue.
Yeah.
And then does the guitar riff as he cups his hand to the audience. It was just perfect. And then pulls his shirt off. It was.
And the crowd is losing their minds.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, this is it. This is the last time. And if that was it, that would have been perfect. That moment. That would have been it. And then you get the end with War. I don't care that, you know, Shango lost his cue. Yeah, whatever. Warrior hitting to the music, which was never done at that time.
No, they never played the music.
Never did, and that was the best person to do that too. For him to come back and save Hogan, and you have the same three people in the ring that you were supposed to have in the ring at SummerSlam 91.
Yeah,
perfect bookend.
And you know what? Like, I mean, obviously Monsoon and Heenan are amazing together, but their commentary at that point is also fantastic, and it's not funny commentary like they're known for. Monsoon is like, "This is crazy!" Like, he's talking about, like, they're killing Hulk Hogan. He's like, "This is crazy!" Like, he's got that high pitch. And then the Warrior, they're like, "It's Warrior's music!" And Bobby Heenan screams, "That's the Ultimate Warrior!" Like, it's like they get wrapped up in it just as much as we were wrapped up in it.
Yeah.
And you don't get that at all anymore. They're too detached from what it is.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go silent or whatever. Yeah, and then you have the Warrior gunning out.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah.
The crowd losing their mind, like we hadn't seen him in 6 months, and
you know they're losing their mind when the camera's shaking a little bit because the cameras are sensitive to sound.
Yeah.
So when you see that camera shake, it's because it's going nuts in there.
The bump that Papa Shango takes on that Warrior clothesline is also it's so fast.
It's so fast. And he knows, and he's like, and he knows he deserves to get it hard.
Yeah, because he's late
at that point.
Yeah.
He not only is he late when the camera cuts to Shango. He runs and stops.
Yeah.
And he's late. I think at that point, Patterson must have been told to just gut run after him. Yeah. I'm sure they were already like at the entrance screaming at him to go.
How quickly was Vince McMahon's headset thrown to the ground?
I think it was already broken.
It was broken at the Flair blade job.
And I'm going to tell you what. when Savage is celebrating in the ring with Elizabeth, mm-hmm. Monsoon and Heenan are quiet.
Oh, yeah. They're probably getting yelled at.
That's it. That's when Flair. And when Flair gets backstage, when they do the backstage interview, when he's completely in red face at that point, yes. And Hennig, he's eerily quiet, Flair. Eerily calm.
Right.
Like, not calm. Like, he's kind of anxious, but he's not like blown. It's Hennig that's doing the blowing up. I think he gets backstage and McMahon tears him apart. Before, and then he has to go and cut that promo.
Well, because what McMahon says to him is, like, just when you're about to hit something great, you do something like this and ruin it. It was something along those lines. And if you read anything from Flair during that era or any, he's like crippled with anxiety all the time. And like, he's really? Always worried about his self-worth. And so, like, I don't know if Vince knew that, but like, if he did, that's such a low blow for someone with like poor self-worth.
Yeah, right? Well,
like,
yeah.
You're almost great, but then you ruined it. Like,
yeah, he did have a rough last half because he blew it, like, you know, with the Hart matches and the Savage matches. He blew both of those matches, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just a perfect ending, and Sid was the perfect. I mean, I'm super glad with how it came. I'm never with WrestleMania 8. I'm never like, oh man, like, oh, look at what this should have been. Like WrestleMania 18, I'm like, man, this could have been amazing. And you know, well, we got Rock and Hogan, but we should have had more.
Do you change Rock and Hogan?
No. I mean, if I can't get Austin and no, I loved. I think The Rock really adopted. I don't know. I never would have had high hopes for Austin Hogan. I just, their styles really clash too much.
No, Hogan and Rock is more of a successor to Hogan's style than Austin was.
Yeah.
Like Austin's in the vein of a Flair until he starts brawling, right? Rock is in the vein of a Hogan.
Of a Hogan. He's the size and the clean. He's like a clean wrestler. You know, he's a clean sports entertainer, babyface, heel. He can do it all. Whereas Austin is, it's not the same kind of thing. But I mean, for the name marquee, yeah, you want to see how they're going to do that. But I don't think we would have gotten the incredible moments in that match that we would have gotten.
No, because also the crowd wouldn't have turned on Austin.
That's true.
Well, maybe
that's
they would have a bit, but not to the level, because they always turned on Rock. For whatever reason.
They always did. Yeah.
Whatever reason. I mean, he's the best charismatic guy maybe they've ever had, but they always turned on him.
Yep. Because they could.
And that moment when Hogan hulks up is an all-time WWF moment, right?
It is.
Yeah. What do you do with Austin on that card?
On 18?
Yeah.
If I keep that match the same?
Yeah, keep that match the same. And it's in the main event, obviously.
Yeah, you put that in the middle. I like your idea you told me. I think you have Austin and Angle take on the Outsiders.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
Is that what I think that was your idea?
Yeah, it was. It was either that or Austin and Triple H against the Outsiders.
That was your idea. It was Austin and Triple H against the Outsiders. That's the one I would do.
And then
that's definitely the one I would do.
My contention with WrestleMania 18 is that it should have been RVD, a coronation for RVD.
Yeah, but again, that one suffered again from too many stars on the show.
Right, and yet there's so many matches where you don't give a shit about any of the guys.
No.
Like, all those tag matches
are
terrible. And then what do you do with Kurt Angle? Kurt Angle is the outlier. Because what you could do is...
No, you have him and Jericho at that point. You know, they both would have been free at that point.
Yeah, see, I'd put RVD against Jericho.
Yeah, or you could do the three of them.
Yeah, or... You could take Austin out of that match against the Outsiders. Do like was X-Pac still there? He must have been, eh?
Yeah.
Do X-Pac.
He was. He was there.
Do X-Pac Triple H against the Outsiders.
Yeah, that's a better one.
And
yeah.
Do Austin Angle, like the final blow off to their feud of the previous
year. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that'd be good.
Because you get a great match out of it, right?
Yeah.
And then you still got Taker Flair.
See, that one I didn't like either. That one was not a good pairing either.
Really? I you know what? It's been a long time since you've seen it.
Yeah.
I'd rewatch it because I think it's quite good.
Okay.
Yeah, like
I just thought of all the matchups they could have had. It's like they're gonna put Flair into. It feels a little wonky.
Yeah, I mean the other thing you could do is you keep Flair off the card. This would be a worse match.
But I think they should have had the Flair Vince blow off at that one.
Yeah, I could live with that too. But like this would be a worse match, but maybe mean more is you could have Taker and Kane against the Outsiders.
Oh, that'd be, yeah. And that makes more sense storyline wise.
But it'd be a way worse match.
That's okay.
But not a worse
match. I don't care about the match quality for that.
Not a worse match than Austin. I mean, Austin Hall is fine, but it's not great. Like,
it's not great. I mean, it's a clash of styles. I mean, Hall was forced to brawl.
Right. Well, he'd be forced to brawl against Undertaker and Kane also.
He would, but I mean, he wouldn't have to keep the pace.
Right.
Like he did with Austin. It felt like he was trying to keep up with Stone Cold.
Yeah. I mean, what you could also do if you do that is you could have Triple H fight Austin. There's just so many options on that show.
Well, that was the original plan, wasn't it? Triple H and Austin? Yeah, I think that was. Yeah, because they were the two-man wrecking crew.
Right, right. And then he gets hurt, you know, and he toughed out that injury. Remember how tough he is?
He's a tough guy.
Did you see that Beautiful Day video?
From U2?
Yeah.
It was about him.
Your favorite band at the time?
Triple H. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Not at the time?
No, never. Never at any time.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's move on.
After that hectic conference, here is what a very disturbed Sid Justice had to say.
Sid Justice, you were obviously not pleased with the news.
Hey, yo, shut up!
I want to say something. What happened at Royal Rumble? It was simple. I was the last man standing. I would be the world champion if it wasn't for you, Hogan, pulling me out from outside the ring. Now, what you did, Jack Tunney, was bogus. The most bogus act you've ever pulled off.
So Nikki's all into getting chickens. She wants to get chickens, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been pushing, like, I know it's not real, but I keep telling her that I don't want to get chickens unless we get a rooster.
Oh,
and,
no.
And it's fucking infuriating her. like, she's like, it's so loud. I'm like, yeah, but we need it. Like, I keep pushing this.
Why would you need it? Why? What's the reasoning you're using for needing it?
Because I want to call it Ravishing Rick Rooster.
Like she went to hit you or kick you when you said that?
It's like, so at first, like, because she's like, what would you name it? Like, it started fun. Like, it started like, what would you name it if you had? Because we're talking about, like, if we've got chickens. She's like, I want to name them Broadway things. And I'm like, well, I'd want to name them wrestlers. Like, it'd be one called CM Cluck or like stupid like that. And like Hen Hogan, like all this stupid
CM Cluck.
and so at first it was like, yeah, and if we had a rooster, she's like, what would you call him? Like Ravishing Rick Rooster. And she loved it, like,
yeah, of course.
But now it's gone to like an absurd point of like she can't bring it up without me telling the kids we're getting a rooster. and then they all jump on board.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's funny because just the other day, it turns out I live across from a farm because it's a funny property. You can't tell that it's a farm.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of farm that is, but I don't know what farm
it's
it is.
It's a hidden farm?
And I don't. It's like a hidden farm because like suddenly they have tractors out, but I've never seen like fields. I just see a bunch of different houses and I had already looked them up. Like, you know, it's several families of the same families. Like a father's in one house and a daughter's in another and a son's in another. And they all have their kids. Right.
Right.
And now they have tractors and they're bringing tractors out and they're doing some work, you know, and stuff. And the other day there was a fire and I was like, cause I can only see, cause they're down a bit and through trees. So I just see smoke and I'm freaking out. Right. So I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? You know what I mean? I'm like, cause we're in the woods, you know what I mean? So
you immediately think forest fire.
I'm thinking forest fire, but my OCD is gone because I'm wearing my pajamas. I'm like, do I want to go outside and put my dirty Corona boots on? You know, they've been out in the Corona and then, you know, my OCD. And I'm like,
what are we walking through the shelves of a store?
Yeah, I know. No, don't try to reason with it. Okay. There's no reasoning with it.
I'm reasoning with you, anyway, not with it.
You can't. No, you can reason with me. There's no problem. when it hits, and I have to wash everything in Lysol, including my head, like it's no. But anyway, so like I had to go upstairs and like check from the balcony and like they were burning all of their branches. So that's what it was. But they were patting it down with the tractor. That they were like, do you understand what I'm saying? They made a bonfire with the giant branches, but were slapping it down with their tractor. And I was like, what is happening?
Wait, like while the fire was burning?
Yeah, the wooden – the sticks. You know like you were collecting in your yard? They were doing it
too.
Don't
trivialize it. Don't trivialize what I'm doing.
It's not trivializing. I'm trying to make you relate to what's going on.
Okay, go on.
Okay, yeah, the sticks that you were doing, they had their own, but it was just a giant pile of them, which they just set on fire.
Okay.
And he was patting down like the smoke, but with the tractor.
Why?
Like to, I don't know. That's why. I was like, what the hell is happening? Anyway, so that was one thing. But then the other day, the tractor comes around again. And it's an old guy in there. Why did you think I was trivializing what you were doing?
I was joking.
Okay.
Why would I be upset about you talking about
I was me? Just wondering. I was like, well, yeah. I was like, is he getting insecure about the size of those twigs? Like, I don't – anyway.
My twigs are bigger than this guy's
twigs. Your twigs are fucking – yeah. But anyway, so the old guy – so the guy comes out. Now, the closest building to my house is a garage. There's no house there. It's a garage, and that's where they keep the tractor. Anyway, I'd met him, and he's like, yeah, on fait un poulerie. I'm like, where? C'est juste là. And it's like right behind the garage. So immediately I'm thinking, oh, fuck, how noisy is this going to get?
Right.
And yeah, but it, I mean, the, and I calculate it's 120 meters from my bedroom. There's no way. Like, there's no way.
It's a football field away.
It's way more than a football. It's like a, it's 100 and, cause that's 100 yards and meters are bigger. This is like a football field and 2/3. So, and the odds, like, because I keep my humidifiers on. There's not going to happen. But now that you bring that, and it's funny because people online in the St. Adele communities on Facebook are all like, we should all get chickens. I'm like, fuck, this town is going to be overrun with noise.
How loud do you think? Chickens aren't that loud.
They were like, we should go to City Hall because there was a law that apparently has been lifted and changed that you needed to have a property of 25,000 square meters. Square meters to have.
And they were like, the size of Baltimore. Like, you can't have that property.
People were like, but people in the city are having chickens. Why aren't we allowed? Let's go to City Hall. I'm like, I'm opposing you all on this.
Why? You want chickens. They're good.
I'm kidding. I know
they're
that.
Good.
I didn't write that.
They do everything.
I know
for
they're
you.
Good. Do they make noise?
They do make.
I've heard only in the morning.
They make noise, but it's like a dog barking is louder, like way louder.
A dog barking is way louder?
Okay. I think so.
If a dog barking is way louder, then I'm fine.
Not a rooster. A rooster makes the most noise of all, apparently.
The rooster's getting shot. That's why. I will shoot a rooster if it happens. And I do have a gun strong enough. Not a gun to kill humans, but a gun to kill a rooster.
Why wouldn't you just cut his head off? Like, you're going to have to take more than one shot at this rooster. Like, it's smaller than your imagination.
Well, it's just they have barbed wire, you know. But they're not putting a rooster. They're just putting chickens.
Yeah, if they put a rooster, then you should have a conversation.
Oh yeah. No, that'd be totally inappropriate if they put a rooster.
Yeah, if they put a rooster, you put a bull.
A bull?
You gotta escalate the situation.
We're in a global pandemic. Where am I gonna get a bull?
Ah, you find one. There's gonna be a farm. All the wild bulls on the
first
side.
First, I have to find a Spaniard.
Well, no, you have to become a Spaniard in order to fight it.
Right. Oh, boy. Anyway, it's funny. It's just funny how this chick thing is like from three angles now that I've heard about chickens in the last 24 hours.
Well, apparently they're good. Like, apparently, like, you get an egg every day from a chicken.
Well, that's the thing. It's like only an egg. That's why I'm like, well, what do I fucking need a chicken for? If it's like I can just go to the store and get 30. Like, why?
Well, you don't get just one chicken.
I know. You would have to get five.
That's how many eggs you eat in a day?
I could go to 3 to 4 a day. Yeah.
Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Is that what he has?
When he was a lad, he ate 4 dozen eggs every morning to help him get large.
Really?
And now that he's grown, he eats 5 dozen eggs because he's roughly the size of a barge.
Mm.
Did you know about him? No.
I don't have children.
Well, you never watched – you didn't watch – yeah, I keep forgetting this about you. Like, I feel like you didn't watch any of the normal things that like I watched as a kid.
Like what?
Beauty and the Beast? You've never seen that, right?
I did, but I think it was the Disney version.
Yeah, that's, you the know version. What you... that's the version.
No, then the one I watched was the Linda Hamilton
the
series.
The television show?
Yeah, that's what I grew up on.
With Ron Perlman?
Yep.
Fuck.
Yep. They had to get a guy with the play the lion, of course.
It's not a lion.
What, he looked like a lion in that series.
That's because of Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman looks like a lion.
But that's it. There you go. I always associated him with a lion because of that series. And then we'd watch Street Legal, which was on CBC. Yeah, there's not much on TV at that time.
Like the only Canadian in Canada watching CBC.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, there was like two channels in those days up here.
Up where?
In San Adele. It was a Friday night thing. Yeah. Right.
Where?
Yeah, we were lucky to get the main event that night.
Yeah.
We were lucky to get NBC, yeah. All right. So this was good.
Hey, Moses, where's my car, man?
Space 22, man.
22.
22! Oh, man! Oh, man! Moses, you idiot! Oh, you dumbass! Where are you? Why me? Why me? Why me?
So, Sid, 96. Sid.
Shut up!
So here's the thing. Speaking of no talent, 96 comes along and Vince calls him up and he's like, I need a top star. And he's like, you don't have anybody else? That was his reaction, yeah. Right? It was it's like, you don't have anybody else? Because he's now working on a farm, on his friend's farm. And his friend needed him. And I can see Sid working on a farm.
Of course. I can see him yelling at the animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Shut up! Eat your slop!
I'll kill you. Anyway, so
to a pig,
to a chicken.
I always enjoy when like people treat animals as though they're people.
Yeah.
Like and talk to them as though they're people.
Like Borat when he tells the cow to be quiet at the beginning of the movie. Dish it.
Dish. What is that?
What is that? It's a chicken.
Oh, what?
Why is he wearing that?
I feel sorry for anyone who just knows Borat from the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the movie, but like the show is so good.
The show is fantastic.
Ali G show for anyone who just knows it from the movie.
So Sid, he's clucking at a chicken.
Yeah, he's up there against CM Cluck.
Yeah, CM Cluck, and that's good. That is good. CM Cluck. He's like, he's cool, but he's still clucks.
He still clucks.
So anyway, so for those of you still listening, he goes back to so at Vince's, like, again, it's just the opposite now, whereas instead of there being an overloading of stars, there's been a lot of stars that have just left. You have the Outsiders that have left. You have X-Pac that's left. You have Brett that's on vacation. And Warrior's left again. So so Vince calls up Sid. And Sid's like, well, you don't have anybody else? And he's like, you know, I need you, pal. And so at this point, his friend needed him on the farm. And so at that point, Sid goes back to Vince and he says, okay, but I need guaranteed money. Mm. And he says, and I don't know if this is true or not, but he says, and that was the first guaranteed contract that Vince ever signed. But I don't know if that's true. And I don't know if Sid knew that was ever true, but totally reasonable to assume that Sid got guaranteed money. So he's got guaranteed money and he's locked in. And he was only – and actually, I'm here's a tidbit in there. My timeline's a bit off. This was after the In Your House six-man. That six-man, Sid went into thinking it was just going to be a one-off and then he's going to go back to the farm.
Right. Just replacing the Warrior and that's it. That's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And then goes to SummerSlam, which I thought was a – and I know you love this moment, the powerbomb on the Bulldog.
Powerbombs the shit out of the Bulldog. Like, yeah. He just drives him. But you know what's even better about that whole presentation? Look, for those of you who, like, are not sold on Sid, I would like you to just go back and watch his promo and then his entrance into that match. And the whole thing is just a perfect – characters like you don't have anymore. He talks about how he was laying asleep and people were chanting his name. And then he comes out and he's fist bumping everyone and the crowd's going nuts. Like, that's just a perfect encapsulation of who this guy is at this point. Yeah. Because it's funny. Because we at the very beginning of this conversation, we talked about how, like, we don't see him as a face. But he was actually the perfect face for this time period.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're getting edgy a little bit.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't want to say this, but he's almost the precursor to Steve Austin.
He's totally a precursor. He's got the vest, and he's a little bit of a badass. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's not a quite face, not especially in the late 96 when we're going to late 96, 97. It's like he's a heel or a face depending on who he's facing.
Right. I mean
– at that point.
He's certainly a face in Madison Square Garden when he fights Shawn Michaels.
And actually that's something that he makes clear in the video. He goes, it's New York. I'm not getting booed in New York. And no. Looking back on it, oh, wow, that was true. Albany, they cheered him over Hogan.
Yep.
Sid, he doesn't remember this moment they, and I remember noticing it. It was an MSG show in 92. He beats Hercules in 25 seconds. And it was, I think it was Hercules' final match. That's it. Sorry, that was another guy, part of the mass exodus, the mass steroid exit. Also, you have on that list Jin the Anvil Neidhart as well. So when, these are, I mean, we're talking the entire mid-card gone, right?
When did they get rid of Mr. Hernandez?
It was I think it was February 25th, somewhere around there. But he still had appeared on Superstars a couple more times they had already taped. I think his final TV match is a loss against Owen in March. But,
I brought that up as a completely facetious question.
Just
to use the name Hernandez, but here you are.
Mr. Hernandez, sorry. Yeah. No, because I did a whole little study on that about how many people had left, especially in that glut of time that they just cut everybody out. And also Ed Leslie doesn't appear anymore after Sid destroys his barbershop.
Was it a peer-reviewed study?
No, I've not presented it yet. Maybe we'll have a show on it.
If I ever had to shut down a barbershop, I would send Sid. Because that was the best breaking up of a small business I've ever seen. I don't know what the barber did to hurt his feelings, but like, I mean, he threatened to rearrange his face on Saturday Night's main event, but this, he just went wild.
Rearrange your face.
Sincerely,
and again, the mystery of, you never see the shaving cream bottle explode.
No.
So we don't know where it came from. Did Sid, in a moment, take the shaving cream and cream himself?
No way.
Vince said, that looks stupid. Because, like, here's the thing. If it occurred because Sid is doing a number with that chair, like, sideways and jabbing it into the wall of the barbershop.
That's when it happened. You can see it happen.
You can see it happen?
You see splashing.
Okay, I'm going to have to rewind and go and check that.
Yeah, don't act as though you still have it on tape.
No, I have it. I have that up. I have many of those. I have the entire month of January.
Nice.
I have Superstars, Challenge, and not just January. I have every episode from, I think, November through to WrestleMania. I have Superstars, I have Challenge, and I have Primetime.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great. Primetime in those era is fantastic.
On tape?
The round table? Yeah. That's where Fair to Flair began.
I know. A lot of people think.
It's just great. It's just the back and forth between Gorilla and Heenan. It's Gorilla, Heenan, Hennig, McMahon, and always a rotating whoever else that was irrelevant.
Right,
because
that
idiot. The Heenan was the anchor of the show, and then when they'd have Monsoon come in, and you know how busy they must have been, you know, doing the recordings of whatever they were doing. So Monsoon would come in when he could probably. And it was just a treat because it was just, they would just get back to, because after when they had like Duggan and Hillbilly, the chemistry wasn't there anymore.
Well, and Heenan would act differently when Monsoon was there, which is great.
Like, yeah, he was being kept in line.
Yeah, like, and whenever Monsoon would stand up, because Monsoon, you don't get a lot of, you don't imagine it a lot because you always see him behind a desk, but he's a large man.
Oh, he was. He was, what, 360?
A gorilla, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, I will. He was a large man. So that era was great. But yeah, it's that moment he's jabbing the chair in. Here's my thing. Does the shaving cream come out of the tip of the bottle, or does the bottle explode and Sid is just very lucky that he closed his eyes at the right time?
Oh, I think the bottle explodes. But I also think he was probably in such a rage tearing it apart that his eyes were just closed.
Yeah.
Like, he was just smashing that thing. I don't know what his problem was.
Yeah, he almost ended WrestleMania right there.
Right.
At that point, Hogan doesn't have an opponent at that point.
They go back to Flair, probably.
They would have to go back to Flair.
Yeah. They ruin, and then they just ruin WrestleMania.
It's done.
Maybe not. Maybe they rearrange everybody.
Yeah. You go back to the original plan, maybe.
Yeah, so he's...
So 96. Yeah, so yeah. You were going
to
say?
Well, I was just going to say, like, back to 96. Like, he wins that championship. And
again, massive pop.
Oh yeah, huge. And he's just giving an old man a heart attack with a video camera.
He hits him with this is what I loved about Sid back then. He clobbers Lothario over the back with the heavy camera. They're not as big anymore, but back then, I think they had the tape in them. And so he didn't just hit him in the chest. He went back out. Oh yeah, yeah. Michaels is crawling to cover Lothario. And then Sid lifts up the camera and crashes it down on Michael's back. And then he goes, fuck you.
Yeah, the fuck you is the best. And then he brings him
and in the then ring. Throws him back in the ring and then power bombs him and pins him. It was just, yeah.
I love, and Sid looks like he cares that he wins the title too.
Yeah.
Both fists go in the air like he's super happy.
Yeah. I mean, and that kicks off a great WrestleMania season.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he beats up Lothario's son later on, Pete. Pete Lothario.
Yep, power bombs him backstage. Yep.
Through a table. I don't even know if the table breaks. Power bombs him.
It doesn't break.
Yeah.
It doesn't break. Did not break.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think his match with Undertaker at WrestleMania is maybe one of the worst WrestleMania main events of all time.
Quite bad.
Yeah, but was... whatever. Like,
yeah,
I forgive Sid.
Yeah, I mean, they and also they were following, one of the greatest wrestling matches of all time, not the Chicago Street Fight, but the one before it. So,
but the Chicago Street Fight was good.
It's quite good. It was too close. It was just, you know what I mean? It was just,
yeah.
It was a weirdly booked show. It's what it was.
We a while ago on No Holds Barred, JT and I, we did a whole segment on talking about how WrestleMania 13 often gets lumped in with like the worst WrestleManias of all time, but we don't think it's actually that bad. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's that bad, and the reason I'll give is the same reason I say for things like WrestleMania 8 when there's a bunch of little bad matches, you know, to fill the greatness.
Yeah.
And I say the same thing because it's like the bad stuff is kept short because it's the greatness that's given the most amount of time. So I was left feeling, you know, B minus B, you know, that night, you know, the next day, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't blown away and overwhelmed by it where I was like, I need a break from wrestling. But I was, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like, you know, after WrestleMania, I don't know, X7 or like 10, I was like, whoa. That I have to show my friends, you know. I wasn't, you know, but it wasn't like 11 where I was like, man, they've got a lot of work to do.
The cupboard is bare here.
It really like the next night Raw from WrestleMania 11 was better than WrestleMania 11, and we're talking about a 1 hour program. So
program,
a very special program. So I don't consider it. It wasn't that bad.
And 13 is actually a kind of an interesting one to rebook too.
Yeah, like, because I always wondered, I asked online, and I always wondered this. So if Brett fights Sean and Taker fights Sid in the undercard, where does that – and Pillman's not ready to come back. Where does that leave Austin?
I don't know because the other match that was rumored was Vader and Mankind.
And Bulldog and Owen.
Yeah, so everybody would have been paired off.
Yeah.
Nah, there's no way they would have done it. They would have moved someone around for Austin at that point.
I had heard, so I had posted this on Instagram, and because you know, and somebody had said the rumor at the time was Bulldog.
Well, if you watch the TV during that period, he had a mini feud with Bulldog.
Oh, did he?
It makes sense. Like, he'd come out and like clip him behind the leg, and even at the Rumble that year, you can see like when Bulldog comes out and Austin's there, there's like heat. I don't want to say there's real life heat, but there's heat between the characters.
Okay, then so I can see that.
There
yeah.
was something there. I don't know if – I mean, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Well, I'm sure the match would have been fine, but
– It was that we don't have anything else for these guys, but we have to get Austin a spot. You know, that's what it comes off as. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. And then Sid's supposed to go – I don't know what happens here where he's supposed to face Brett at the – in your house, which is – we get Austin and Brett again. That's the forgotten Austin Brett match.
Yeah, because it's not as good. It's nowhere near as good as. I mean,
it was nothing. Yeah,
it's eclipsed by what happens the next night on Raw, which is the street fight.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what Sid was supposed to do there, and I don't know why. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that's where Brett was supposed to get his win back on Sid for sure for the two wins that Sid had pinned Brett in the last couple months.
Right.
But I don't know why Sid's not there.
Well, he got it. I don't know if it was before this show, but he gets into the car accident.
That was June, and he talks about that.
Yeah, so it was after, okay.
Yeah, and he was really banged up on that. I mean, probably lucky to be alive.
Right. Yeah, we can't. I can't imagine being that big and being in a car that's flipping.
And also picture his hand up on the roof, because apparently he was trying to fix the sunroof. And that is distracting. I've tried it while driving. If I'm trying to get the sunroof just right, you can't focus on the road. And I was thinking of Sid when I was doing that on the highway. I was like, oh, it's going to be a big problem. And by the way, we both know that road very well. It was the road from Montreal to Ottawa.
Oh, the 40? Trans Canada. Yep. Yeah.
But it was in Ontario. That's not a good road. It's a bad road.
Well, the Ontario part's fine. The Quebec part.
Yeah, the Quebec part. But if they were going at night, which I don't know, but if they're
for
going
sure,
at night,
for sure
oh,
they were.
Yeah. So sure. There's no lights. There's no lights.
Yeah.
On that road, it's a bad road. And now it's you can do 110. We have kilometers up here in Canada. If you're in the States,
yeah.
Just everything happens bigger here.
Yeah. And the rest of the world, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really interesting about all that. Did you want to talk about the Pillman fight?
Well, I think that's an interesting thing. And he gets mocked mercilessly because of the squeegee. But, explain it.
So, and this is why there's a lot of credibility to what he says. And because I never heard his side. We'd only heard Squeegee Sid and all that. He admits that, and it's not like he doesn't do it reluctantly. He just says it. He's like, I had already hurt him deliberately in the ring. Because actually, I think the interviewer asks him, says, there were kind of rumors that you hurt him. And he goes, yeah, no, I tried to hurt him. It was matter of fact. So I'm giving this story complete credibility because of that. So he goes into the bar, and this was in 91 when he gets injured by Jake, and he's in WWF and Pillman's in WCW, and both of them were in the same room or something like that.
Right.
And they're both happened to be at the same bar, and he was there, and him and Pillman got into an argument. And then Sid says that he goes outside to cool down. Now, the big popular story is that, they got in a fight, Pillman challenges him to a fight, and then Sid runs away, comes back screaming with a squeegee in his hand.
Yeah.
And, we can picture that knowing what we thought we knew about Sid, but the story that Sid says is that they got in a fight, Pillman, I believe, said he wanted to fight him, and Sid didn't want to fight him because of his shoulder. He had just injured his shoulder with Jake. That also makes sense. That makes sense. So he goes outside to cool down. He's outside in his car. And Pillman comes out with – he said a number of other people, and the argument continued and escalates, and he says this part with embarrassment. And he's not – he says there's some shame. You should watch this part. He says, I reached back into my car, and I just happened to have my squeegee under the passenger front seat. And this I know because I have my own squeegee, and I have left it there. I have left it right in front of the passenger seat. I know, because it's like, oh, I forgot to put it back in, because you do the front and then you get back in the car and you're like, oh, I don't want to put it back in the trunk. I got to go. You just dump it. So yes, that I have experienced myself. So he goes, I just reached for the first thing I could find. And that to me is, I wasn't there, but that kind of makes sense. And he was embarrassed. He goes, yeah, that's what was there.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah. The guy's hurt.
Yep.
This guy who's like – and I imagine Pillman is a bit of a hothead.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this guy's trying to fight him when he's clearly hurt and weak. He's probably got his arm in a sling. Like
– yep.
Now, no excuse for him murdering Arn Anderson, right?
No, I wasn't there for that. And he says he doesn't remember that. So, there's no – we're not giving a pass on that.
No. I actually quite like the things – like because you and I both have a background in performance, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting the things that he doesn't remember. Like, he doesn't remember WrestleMania. He doesn't remember kicking out of the leg drop. He doesn't remember that. But, for us as fans, things are so ingrained, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might be like, oh, my God, Sid's entrance at WrestleMania 8 was the best, and I'm with you. But as a performer, I think you would attest to this, is thinking back to one particular show of, say, thousands is actually extremely difficult.
It really is.
So, these fans who get upset when guys don't remember these things, it's really hard.
It really is. And it's funny, when we listen to those shoot interviews, they always say the name of the town. They don't say the name of the event. Even if it's a SummerSlam or whatever, they'll say, yeah, I think it was New York that night. They always say that's how they remember it, is by the town they were in.
Yeah, it's like I remember doing a show in Westmount and the show raining and me running up on stage and slipping and falling and landing on my ass. And then putting my hands in the air and screaming to the audience's delight.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's Westmount, right? Like, that's what.
Yeah, and we remember the name of that show because we did it for 2 years, but you wouldn't remember what scene you were doing.
No, not even close. Not even close.
And we've done thousands of shows combined of different art forms. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't. But, for us, I guess the as fans, it was like, well, I mean, we do have the videotapes. They could always watch the videotapes, but maybe they don't want to. Maybe, you know, there's some really bad emotions.
Well, do you watch yourself? I mean,
I hate watching myself. No, I hate it.
I could see using it as like a tool, right? But like
in the beginning, I would, but now I don't.
It's like if you're a professional wrestler that's wrestled thousands of matches, you're probably not looking over your tape anymore.
That's probably what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point, and I had not thought of that.
One of the things that struck me as I was listening to him too is he seems genuinely hurt that the Rock and Roll Express got into the Hall of Fame before he did.
I didn't watch that part. Tell me.
Well, they start talking about the Hall of Fame, and he kind of starts talking about how it doesn't mean anything anymore. And he uses the idea of example of the Rock and Roll Express, right? And he says the Rock and Roll Express never worked the territory, but they're in the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, I was their champion, and I'm not. And I think it's a fair point. And I mean, he's clearly a Hall of Famer, right? I mean, I know the criteria is super low as soon as Coco Beware got in, but like
– that was the moment, the Coco Beware moment.
Well, yeah, because then it's just anybody's getting in now. Coco was super memorable, and like I'm sure he was very popular. I, as a child, had a Frankie shirt.
I used to love the Pile Driver song.
Yes, well, the whole album. And one of my favorite moments to this day is Jimmy Hart trash-talking Frankie at – I think it's the 1990 Royal Rumble.
91 against the Mountie.
Yeah. What do you think about
that? What are you going to do, Frankie?
But Sid's definitely a Hall of Famer, right?
Definitely.
Like,
he's the champion of both companies.
Yeah, multiple time world champion.
Of both companies, and he wrestled in both boom eras.
Yeah, that's right.
And he main evented WrestleMania twice.
Twice. He main evented a WrestleMania in both boom eras. Well, I guess 97. 97 is not really a boom, I guess.
It was just the beginning of it. But, I mean, there's no reason to think that would have, you know, he would have continued into the boom. He would have been great during the Attitude Era.
Well, he was okay in WCW. Like, I never minded his stuff. I think he ended up looking foolish a lot of the times, but like...
It was bad writing for him.
Yeah. I mean, you got Vince
Russo. In a Vince Russo WWF 98, he would have been fine.
Well, he probably ends up being a lot like he was in ECW. Where he just come out and kill guys.
Yeah.
Like wearing jeans
I could see him in later 98, you know, putting over guys like Mankind and The Rock.
Yeah. I could see him being somebody Vince sends against Steve Austin.
Oh, yeah. Right away.
To try and take the title off of him. Like.
Right away. Yeah. Right away. Like, that would have been King of the Ring 98 instead of Kane, probably.
Right. Sid. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it would have been better, but.
But Austin would have pinned him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and it just gives credibility all around. Because Kane still didn't have enough credibility at that point, for me. He was still one-dimensional at that point.
Well, you had the kitsch factor of, like, who you didn't know who this guy was. And plus, he's coming off a loss, though. That's the other – two losses.
Yep, that was it, yeah. Because to me, it's like, I always knew who he was underneath there. And I was like, all right, he really didn't have credibility at that point.
Yeah, I mean, if there was ever a time for Kane to beat The Undertaker, was it then in that first – not the first blood, the Inferno match.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, instead of pinning him, set The Undertaker on fire.
Well, I was surprised that he still stuck around. I really thought that this Kane thing was not going to last. But I guess they needed Kane to work because they were low on talent at that point. They were still very thin.
Yeah, and they brought him in and treated him like a main event guy, even though he wasn't quite up to speed.
No, and it's not like he was pinning anybody. That was the thing that gave it away. He wasn't pinning anybody.
Right.
He was just interrupting matches and then coming out.
You can tell – you can really tell when they do that when they have too much talent. I was thinking about 2010 today and like how they vault Miz up to the main event at the end of 2010, right? Mm. And it's egregious because there's guys that are way better than the Miz.
Yeah.
Whereas here there isn't really a ton of guys way better than Kane.
That era is like – it's marked by they did the most with the little that they had.
Yeah.
I mean, WrestleMania 14 is a really quintessential of that. It's just they did the most with the, you know, they got to get Hunter over, give him the best opponent you can have, the best feud, you know, that's still linked with the Hart DX thing. Give him Owen, you know, give that, let him go, you know, Rock and Shamrock and let him go. The Undertaker busts out his best match that's not with Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels in his whole career, I think, with Kane.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the second best match on that show.
Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main event is quite good, but I think Taker Kane. I mean, that's also Taker Kane's best match ever together.
It was, yeah.
Out of the fucking 100,000 that came after. Like.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I think Sid would have fit in great in that era because he needed to be reined in, you know, and McMahon would have reined him in, but Russo would have brought out the better parts of his character.
Yeah. Well, that's the key with Russo is you always needed someone to rein him in.
Yeah, exactly. Because him and WCW, wasn't so good. I mean, he gives us. I mean, look, I'm grateful for all the you know Botchamania moments that's produced.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great year for Botchamania moments with Sid.
The half the brain thing is amazing.
The half the brain. I mean, and the stuff that we forget because the half the brain is such a golden moment. We forgot about the Goldberg, you know, crushing up his car into a little piece.
We forgot about him passing out. They do the Steve Austin push with Sid.
They do the Steve Austin, yeah. I think they put Russo in there to ruin it. I really do. I mean, man.
I mean, look, I think Russo was a fraud. Like, and I think he just sold them on a bill of goods that he couldn't produce. Like, I think Russo.
And he really could.
Like, I think Russo's greatest strength wasn't his creative. I think he had. Probably had good creative ideas for a while, but I think Russo's greatest strength is actually just caring about every character on the show.
Yeah.
And so yeah, everybody had something to do. Everybody was tied into somebody else.
And we always say this like about Royal Rumble 99. It always gets crapped on, but every person that comes to that ring is over and they have a feud going with somebody else in that match.
Yeah. I don't know how much I believe that anymore. I watched it recently. And like, you're right. Everybody's over. It's just not laid out properly.
I don't, I'm not talking about the match. I'm just talking about everybody there you care about.
Yes, yes, I would definitely agree with that. It's actually quite like 90 in a lot of ways in that aspect. Only 90 right. has all the stars, but like
yeah, 90 yeah, it's organic stars with yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 99 but Rumble, I, yeah. Just the whole thing is just laid out wrong. But yes, you're right. Everybody was over.
It was laid out horribly. No, laid out horribly. Don't, yeah. I don't want to be on the record for saying that was like anything of a good show.
Well, I have you on the record as 99 is the greatest Royal Rumble of all time. Is that – do you okay. need me to correct the record?
I probably have to go. I think my long distance charges are through the roof.
Through the roof?
Through the roof,
pal. You know, Bell has a monopoly up here in Canada.
He's got a monopoly. Yeah, oh, my gosh. Mama Bell. Ma Bell, Kang.
Ma Bell, Kang. Jezebel, Kang. So before we go, though, we have to talk about – do you remember the Virgil story from the shoot interview?
No. I must have missed this.
It's right at the beginning because he's talking about how
I definitely missed this.
He's
go
talking
ahead.
About how he got into the business originally. And what I think is great is it was Randy Savage that got him into the business. In the territory.
Oh, see, I missed that part. See, I just skipped right to the 91-92 stuff. This is great.
Yeah, so Savage got him in the business, and they start asking about Lanny Poffo, right? And all Sid says about Lanny Poffo is what you can imagine, right?
Does he really?
Yeah, he goes, well, I heard he had the ability to, you know, give himself fellatio, right?
And what? Really?
And then, yeah.
Was that a rumor?
Yeah, the Lanny Poffo. That's a huge rumor.
I didn't know that.
This isn't the first you're hearing about this.
This is the first I'm hearing about this.
Yeah. So the big rumor is Lanny Poffo could like give himself fellatio, right?
Oh.
And so the interviewer.
Okay, I thought the rumor with Lanny Poffo was that he was gay.
No, I don't think so. Well, maybe also that.
Because that's the thing. Because like I know that people are like, no, he has a wife and kids. I'm like, that's a homosexual. That has to be. How is that guy who is doing the cartwheels and the poetry and the mincing and all that stuff. Like, how is that? Anyway, all right.
You know who else isn't gay that I thought would be gay? James Corden.
Oh, he's not?
No, right? I was watching, yeah. We watched Into the Woods today, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I believe James Corden is like this husband. And I'm like, I don't know. He's just a bit too effeminate, a bit too weak. And like, yeah. Nikki was like, well, he has a family and children. I'm like, what? Like, not that gay people can't have families and children. Obviously, they can. But, like, yeah. She was like, oh, he has a wife. And you're like, I was shocked. But anyway.
Not that men can't be wives. No, I'm not.
I feel like a wife in my own home. I can't even get a goddamn rooster, you know?
So Savage gets him in?
Yeah, Savage gets him in. And they ask him about Lanny Poffo. And he says, well, I heard, like, he could do this, right? And in the interview.
I have to go watch Sid say that. Okay. Yeah.
I don't remember how he puts it, but it said low key too.
I have to go watch this. Okay.
But then they're like, well, did you ever see him do this?
Oh no.
And Sid's like, no, but we all saw, then he goes, I forget who the boss of the company was. Fuck. Who was it?
What company is this?
It's like, it might be Savage's. It might be Bill Watts. It might be one of those. Let's for the sake of argument, let's say it's Bill Watts, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, I never saw him do it, but Virgil could do it. And then one day in front of Bill Watts, I don't know if it's Bill Watts, but it's Bill Watts, Virgil decided to do it, like, to prove that he could, and Bill Watts fired him. Can you imagine what? Imagine doing that in front of your boss.
Your boss, and while he's on the floor, he gets fired.
Yeah.
He's on the floor with his legs wrapped over his head, and with it. All right, put your pants on. You're fine.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, how do you come back from that?
No, you don't. You don't.
We have nothing else to talk about at that point. Oh, my gosh.
Listen, everybody who's listened to the show so far, we want to thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you.
For leave us reviews. Subscribe to the North South Wrestling Podcast Network. Check out the other shows. We got I'm doing this offhand without a paper in front of me. Chad Campbell's got The Fighting Spirit of 06. He's got Carolina Dreamin'. Jake Williams, he's got the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. JT and I's No Holds Barred. Check out The Year That Was. We also have Wrestling Warzone, Jeff Learns Wrestling. It's a great feed. If you like it, if you like wrestling, if you like what we're doing, please pass it on. Reg, anything you want to add?
I got nothing after I got nothing. That one.
We're just going to end with the image of Virgil. Legs around his head, pants around
and now
his
I can't
ankles.
Get his music out of my head. All right.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.